The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, in today's Irish Daily Mail, the governor of the central bank is quoted as warning that Ireland's planning system is too slow. Well, is it fit for purpose at all? Joining me in studio to talk about this, Claire McManus, director of JFOC Architects and housing spokesperson for the Royal Institute of the Architects of Ireland, the RIAI. And we're also joined by Conor Skeen, environment and planning consultant and former head of the Department of Environment and Planning at TU Dublin. Good morning and welcome to you both. Conor, we'll go to you first because you've been looking at the planning bill. This is the brave new world from Dara O'Brien, the reform of the planning system. And you say, sorry, it's dead in the water. Why?
Yeah, the word in the business is called a dead man walking. It's basically, its central aim is to try to stop people being able to take appeals, to try to reduce the scope to object. And it's fundamentally flawed for that reason. It's a bill by lawyers, for lawyers. It's 700 pages long, Pat, and there are currently 1,500 amendments proposed for it. So it's trying to distract from the main issue here. And the main issue is not the planning system, it's the legal system. Our legal system is internationally recognised as being slow, awkward and backward-looking. We have a really bad set of legal draftsmanship issues. Our legislation is really badly written. And the legal system itself has no administrative court, the most common type of court throughout Europe for fixing the issues that end up causing JR.
So what is the reform, much touted by Dara O'Brien, supposed to deliver? I mean, what's going to change?
Well, what it's trying to do is to reduce the scope for people to object that will end up in JRs. That's the basic problem.
In other words, people who genuinely don't like what's being proposed by a developer, and often, as we even heard in the inquiry into Metrolink, you know, they hadn't even walked the land, some of them, on Movey Road. So you've got people who are looking at maps and trying to draw conclusions from things, and the locals are saying, hang on a second, do you realise what this is going to mean? And the minister is saying, sorry, we're going to legislate you out of your rights.
Well, there are two issues there. The first is that there are very large-scale strategic things that are for the public realm. That's one particular, for the public good, I beg your pardon. That's one type of project. But the vast majority of the stuff that goes through the planning system is local. It should start and finish locally as much as possible. It should facilitate things like local pre-application consultation, facilitate permission by consent from locals, have more exemptions, more guidelines, and be backed up by the Minister of Court. We should do everything we can to keep things out of the legal system, not putting more things into it.
When you say the new bill was drawn up by lawyers for lawyers, what's in it for them? Because if they're going to reduce judicial reviews and so on, there's less cash for them.
Yeah, there is no attempt being made at all to have less judicial review. They're trying to say to stop people having the right to do it in the first place. I mean, let's look at the basics of it. In terms of the thing the government, the central bank mentioned, in terms of speed of planning, the fastest form of planning in Ireland is local authorities. They have to get their decision out to you in 12 weeks. On Bord Pleanála are 12 months. And the court system is 4 years. For God's sake, I mean, the issue is not anything to do with the planning system. It's to do with the legal system. And in terms of the planning itself, and the central bank really ought to know better than to be talking about having an authoritative view on housing crisis. Remember, housing crisis is a universal issue all over the world. I mean, China, the most planned country in the entire world, has, if possible, an even worse housing crisis than almost everybody else in the world. So planning isn't the issue, it's the law is the issue.
Now, this incredible bill, so long as it is with over 1,000 amendments, it cannot really get through, can it, before the next election?
It's not just that it can't get through, it's not going to get support. Everybody in the business, as I said, calls it a dead man walking. It's setting out to address the wrong issues. It's nothing to do with land use planning. Land use planning is about producing better outcomes for society in terms of the residential amenity, in terms of the business environment, in terms of the protection of the environment. It's doing nothing to address those issues. It's just about law. It's just about the process and not planning itself.
One of the features we've come across over the years has been the fact that you've a law maybe that will protect the snail here, or in my local case, the badger there. And then it turns out, well, actually, it doesn't really protect, you know, the planning laws actually supersede European conservation laws and all that sort of thing. I mean, I've been crying out for a rules-based system. where everybody knows where they stand.
Exactly. A rules-based system is what's required. More exemptions, more guidelines, and more straightforward rules. So somebody can almost pre-determine what...
You know, you haven't a chance of getting this because X, Y, and Z, or you've every chance of getting this because of ABC.
But listen to the words we're all using, Pat, getting it. It's as if it's something special to be given to us. I mean, the development of lands should be a right, and the exception should be where there's reasons for not doing it. All of our local area plans, all of our county development plans have strategic environmental assessments already carried out for them that identify in advance what the environmental sensitivity should be. And some very advanced councils, like, say, Fingal, are doing surveys in advance of their own land to try and figure of their own county to try and figure out where the sensitivities are in detail.
So in other words, they will point out the roadblocks that should not be overcome because of the environmental sensitivities, and they will point out to other lands which are fine for development.
Knowledge can't be used as a weapon. It's got to be used as a tool. So the Fingal example is they're going around trying to find out where various different kinds of sensitive birds, for instance, typically nest and roost, and they're putting that up front, so somebody can't arrive along and use the precautionary principle to say, but these birds might land there, they might feed there. Yeah. Fingal are putting...
Now, sure, can't they find another place to land? That's wasn't that in one particular planning case? Oh, these birds, they're very adventurous. They normally arrive here in our spring or autumn or whatever it is. But if we cover that place with buildings, they'll find somewhere else.
Well, there is a problem at the edge of all cities. All cities have a twin problem. The first is the land use management practices at the edge of cities change because farming is less viable, so it becomes more likely to contain naturalising species on the one hand. And the second problem then is when you actually go to a site and you assess the site in great detail, you're likely to find more than you would in a typical field out in the middle of the countryside just because of what's called survey effort. So it's a double problem. I did a big... planning permission oversight for the Icelandic government once, which were trying to stop a project and was stopping because of exactly, as you say, a rare snail in a sand dune. And I said to them, have you ever looked at the equivalent sites everywhere else in Iceland? And they said, no, nobody ever had a reason to. And they went and looked and found the same little critters in every similar habitat everywhere in Iceland. And when the survey effort was applied, something suddenly went from being scarce to just being unstudied.
Unstudied. Stay with us, Connor. Claire McManus is here from JFOC Architects, also housing spokesperson for the Royal Institute of Architects of Ireland. Claire, what is the architect's experience, generally in the RIAI, of trying to get stuff done?
Well, as you and Connor were just describing, the system is incredibly slow. It's also very risky, and it's risky for the reasons that you've been describing. Issues such as birds, snails, infrastructure, road connectivity, etc., etc. It's only developed in detail when the planning application starts being made. And
so, in other words, you don't even discover the roadblocks until you go into the planning process.
Exactly. And that's why the RIAI believe that a 3D planning development plan system is needed.
What does that mean?
Well, what that means is that in each neighbourhood, a 3D plan is developed. And this happens in lots of other places, such as Germany and most of the rest of Europe. We tend to follow the UK.
Are you literally talking about something laid out in three dimensions?
Absolutely. So traditionally, this would be a physical model in the local town hall in somewhere like Germany. Mm-hmm. But now it's 3D, a bit like, you know, Google Street View. You could drive, if you like, around the plan of the city or the town or village or
so
whatever.
So on your own computer?
On your own computer,
or your
exactly.
phone, whatever.
And
you can drive the street that is projected to be built.
Exactly. And you could see what's proposed for the field next to you or wherever. And that would be in terms of height, in terms of density, setback from roads. So it's all blocked out. And then when a planning application is made, it's much, much faster. There's far less risk. There's far less uncertainty because all of this stuff has been front loaded.
Sometimes I see very innovative housing being built, you know, one-off housing mostly. And it's, you know, it's actually very clever and so on. But the architect who's submitting those plans must be in fear of their lives that having spent all the time and effort and doing all the 3D modelling themselves on their CAD design machines, That it'll be turned down by some nameless functionary in a planning department who just doesn't like it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it could be because they don't like it, or there could be some technical issue as well. But you're dead right, and it's a huge cost. I mean, planning applications for housing schemes can cost up to €1 million, and you're talking about spending all that money, and the answer at the end of the day could be no, and that really scares off the more sensible players from engaging in the system, and only really developers with very deep pockets can afford to buy sites without planning permission. And I suppose a bit of evidence that it's so high risk: the banks won't lend money to buy development land without planning permission, because just because land is zoned doesn't mean it's possible to build residential land on it, residential housing. It may be zoned residential, but it doesn't mean it's suitable. It might not have the infrastructure. It might not be possible to connect.
Does it encourage your members in the RIAI to build or design boring stuff? Because that's kind of, the precedent is there, though that row of three bed semis got permission in the field over. So if we do the same here, we will definitely get permission. If we do something a little innovative, maybe employing more advanced concepts in terms of livability and so on, it's a risk. It's a dodgy.
That has tended to be the case in the past, because there's so much risk associated with development. People tend to take as low risk approach as possible. However, there have been changes to the guidelines in terms of housing, so it's not possible to build low density houses anymore, and that's creating a bit of innovation that we're seeing. So I'm referring to the compact and sustainable settlement guidelines that were published by the Department of Housing in March. So that's leading to more innovation, because the kind of old business as usual suburban sprawl type housing, sure, isn't possible anymore.
But what does it mean, though, from your point of view as an architect? Does it mean, how many ways can you design a shoebox for people to live in? Because, you know, your profession, an eminent profession as it is, by God, some of the apartments that have been built in this city are not fit for protracted living. They're okay for the tech guy who comes in and spends 6 months here and then moves on. But certainly you couldn't raise a family in some of these two-bed units.
Yeah, indeed. Like, a two-bed apartment isn't suitable for raising a family.
And where are the three-bed units?
The build-to-rent sector is really only designed for short-term living, and it has a lot of, single aspect dwellings and long corridors, and the private amenity is grouped away from the apartment, or it can be.
If it's there at all. I've looked at developments,
yeah,
and I'm
true.
Saying this is concrete. Where is the amenity space? And then I'm told, actually, it's the balconies. We've added up all the amount of space on the balconies, and that's your green space. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, that build to rent has been removed now, so it's not part of the system anymore. If a developer wants to deliver a scheme for private rental, they have to follow the same guidance as anywhere else, which would mean balconies for every apartment. And
okay, but it does mean that they're designing societally, I suppose, designing for transients. That's what they're doing. They're not fit for family raising. None of them, even the biggest of them.
The one and two beds wouldn't be.
How many three beds are? I mean, you wouldn't know this maybe,
but there are
very few three bed apartments being built in the capital where they're desperately needed.
Yeah, I think the idea behind that, if I understand it correctly, I'm not making these decisions, but the idea behind that is that we have a lot of three and four bedroom housing, say talking about Dublin, but in most places, and we actually have a lot of single and couple families or homes. You know, there's a lot of demand.
So this is a one-child policy by stealth.
Well, I think that maybe people are choosing not to have children, a bit like myself. But, you know, there are, or maybe it's people separating, that there is demand. But then,
So we've decided that we have a dysfunctional society and we designed for that, rather than for a traditional society where families have plenty of room for storage and so on. They may not have a front garden and a back garden and so on, but they have a place where their kids can play. That's what we should be doing. But instead, we're designing housing for divorcees.
I wouldn't consider myself dysfunctional.
Tech transients and divorcees.
Well, there's we need a range of different housing to suit different needs. So we need family type homes. We need homes for people who live on their own. We need, unfortunately, homes for couples who split up. And in that case, where there's kids, the both homes need space for the kids.
No, I've been placing the onus for the entire architecture profession on Claire, and I shouldn't do that. Conor, what is your take on this? Because, you know, this compact housing may be all very well in a city. That's maybe what you expect. But, you know, trying to raise a family of maybe two children in a two-bedroom department and stay there forever, and maybe you're forced to rent it because there's nothing to buy, it seems like we've kind of lost the plot a bit.
We have, Pat. I think you're dead right. What we do need to have is choice. I mean, you know, some of us have been privileged enough to be in the large apartments you get in downtown American and European cities, and you can have a 5, 6 or 7 bedroom apartment with a big corridor down the middle and 2 reception rooms, and they're apartments. They're still apartments, but we're mixing up the words small scale with high density. High density doesn't have to just mean small scale. We've got to offer choice, the full spectrum of choice, and only once we've started to do that will we start to make progress.
Yeah, and I look even at the most modern developments, most of them in my area for rent, you can't buy to save your life. But there's no cav, there's no place to store anything. So if you happen to have a bicycle, you park it outside and, you know, park it at your peril, I would suspect. If you have a few suitcases because you occasionally like to go on holiday, if you've got maybe Christmas decorations you want to store somewhere, sorry, you're going to have to rent from Elephant Storage. You know, it's nonsense.
Somebody lent us an apartment in downtown Manhattan earlier this year, and the apartment was exactly as I described, and in the basement there were huge rooms for storage and for having parties and for all kinds of things, ranging from a suitcase all the way through to bicycles and diving and skiing equipment. So a modern society that understands how to use apartments doesn't just provide the apartment, it has buildings that have everything.
So, Conor, if this bill is dead in the water because of all the amendments and the time that's left in this government, is there another way, a quick way? And I've again suggesting the rules-based approach. So everybody, the planners, applicants,
Pat, remember,
the neighbours.
The rules-based approach cuts both ways. So, for instance, our development classes, when they're told that there's going to be 20 residential units on this site, will have to accept that's all there will ever be. And an awful lot of the problems we're seeing are being forced upon the developers themselves by them paying, exactly as Claire says, too much for a site, and then they have to recover it by getting more yield off the site.
But isn't that caveat emptor? For those people who are flogging a bit of agricultural land that they expect, that is rezoned perhaps, and they expect to get planning on it, they want to maximise their takes. They put a price on it. If the developer says, hang on, sunshine, there's only 20 units on this, I'm not paying you all those gazillions for that land, it's not worth it. So go stuff it.
Yeah, so we've got to get to a situation of rules means rules. And if it says 20 units, that's all there is. And nobody is to waste their money by buying a site. It's a short, brutal solution. But once it becomes clear that you're never going to get more on the land than was originally permitted, that dries up what's called the hope value, which is the driver of the ever upward spiral.
Yeah. I mean, the strategic housing developments, I remember when the you had to have over 100 to qualify. And then a guy goes in with over 100 and then he's cut back to say 80, but he doesn't have to go back to the council because he went in under the strategic housing development. Yeah. And even though he doesn't qualify anymore with the restriction placed upon him, he gets a free ride not having to go back to the council. I mean, what kind of idiots are we?
We're idiots who allow ourselves to be driven by people who are from the lobbying sectors who want to make money off land. And we allow ourselves to see them being assisted then by advocates and activists from outside trying to make out there's something special about housing pressure in Ireland. It's the same problem everywhere in the world. I keep writing this article over and over again every Sunday and never get listened to. It's the same everywhere. Look at China, an entire economy ruined by housing. The best housing advice that's out there is from Premier Xi, and Premier Xi says over and over again, a house is a thing to live in, not invest in. And we've all been blighted by starting to regard houses as a form of investment. We're harming ourselves.
Claire, last words to you.
Well, we would like to see this 3D system developed with community, developed with stakeholders. As an architect applying for planning applications for housing, the various departments within the local authority look at all the different factors in isolation, that
and they should be talking to each other.
And they should be talking to each other. So this is about bringing everyone together when there isn't a planning application to object to, but when we are looking at a real place and a spatial vision for that place and coming up with that vision. And then as Conor said, the rules are all in place. If you comply with the rules, you get permission, you reduce the risk, you reduce the timelines, everyone knows what's coming down the track.
And I know Conor had a proposal for a planning court that would deal with any of, you know, if someone is desperate to object in some way, go to the planning court and it'll be dealt with and finished, and no Supreme Court and no European Court and all the rest of it. Anyway, thank you both very much for joining us. Conor Skeane, Environment and Planning Consultant, former head of the Department of Environment and Planning at TU Dublin, and Claire McManus, Director of JFOC Architects and Housing Spokesperson for the RIAI. Thank you both very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.